Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. Today we're talking about lead contamination in U.S. water supplies with Mark Edwards, who is Charles Lunsford Professor in the Environmental and Water Resources Engineering Group in the Charles E. Vaya Jr. Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University, or what we usually call Virginia Tech. Named a MacArthur Fellow in 2008, Professor Edwards has been much in the news for his work with lead contamination in drinking water, and specifically for his activities with the city of Flint, Michigan. Thank you for talking with us this morning, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
As I understand it, the problem in Flint and in other U.S. communities has at least two dimensions. One is the chemistry of water and what's in the water, and the other is the infrastructure that carries the potable water and the materials used in condition. Can you give us an overview of that for people who don't understand that the way you do?
Yes. Many of our U.S. cities have antiquated infrastructure that really is reducing our options in terms of how we produce and deliver clean water. Because we still have, for example, pure lead pipe in front of homes in about 13 million U.S. homes across the United States, we have to make sure that the water keeps the lead on those pipes and out of the water through corrosion control and pH adjustment and alkalinity adjustment. And if we ever let our guard down, even for a moment, this antiquated infrastructure bites us in the rear. This is what happened in Washington, D.C. from about 2000 to 2006, when corrosion control was not optimal, and we caused one of the worst lead and water contamination events in U.S. history that literally elevated the blood lead of thousands of Washington, D.C. children. And then again in Flint, Michigan, when they failed to follow federal law and they forgot to put this chemical in the water. If they had, none of the problems observed in Flint would have occurred. But when you have bad chemistry plus bad pipes, you not only get neighborhoods of children with elevated blood lead, but you also get Legionnaires' disease and deaths, and you can destroy your infrastructure, which in Flint was unlined iron pipe.
So the problem is in the pipes and not in the water initially?
Well, it's both. I mean, as long as you have these bad pipes that have lead in them, you have to make sure the water is suitable for them. If we had all copper pipes or all plastic pipes in our cities now, we could treat the water in many different ways and not have a lead problem. So it's actually a combination of the two that created the problems that we observed in Washington, D.C. and in Flint, Michigan.
So what's the additive that makes a difference?
The additive that was used in Flint was a chemical called orthophosphate, and this is used at about 50% of U.S. water companies to coat pipes, mainly to make sure that lead does not get into the water. And this chemical, orthophosphate, it's actually a concern because, you know, we're concerned we might run out of our supplies someday, it's expensive, and then we have to remove it at the sewage treatment plant on top of that, because if it gets into lakes and rivers, it can cause algae blooms. So across America, we'd really like to add less of this chemical to the water because it's expensive and we might run out and then we have to remove it then after it's used. But as long as we have lead pipes, we have to keep doing it.
So short term, it sounds like the easy solution is the additive, and long term, it's replacing the infrastructure.
Yes. If we could get ahead of the curve and get all of the lead out of our plumbing, we would no longer have to do this additive or corrosion control. But probably, even if we started looking at this problem very seriously, it's going to take about 50 years to replace all the lead pipes around the United States. And if we're not serious about it, those lead pipes will essentially be there forever. They can last thousands of years.
So when you talk about replacing lead pipes, are these pipes in the distribution system or the service lines or both?
These are almost exclusively service lines. The big pipes that carry the water from the treatment plant to your neighborhood, the water mains, generally are believed to have no lead at all in them. It's only when the pipe branches off to your house or to your building in what's called the service line, which runs generally from the middle of the street to your basement or the point of entry. Those materials are where most of the pure lead pipes are in the U.S. It's very rare you'll have it in the home itself.
So if I understand the finance issues here, that if I have a lead service line coming to my house and it should be or needs to be replaced, it's my responsibility to replace it, isn't it?
Well, that's the debate right now. Who owns this hazardous material? I can guarantee you if this lead pipe was made of gold, everyone would want to own it. The water utility would be fighting in court to say that they own this asset. But since it's a hazardous material, lead, no one wants to own it. So even in cities where the documentation shows that the city law required the lead pipe be installed, and even in some cases that the city owned this material, cities all around the U.S. are now giving it to homeowners. Like, here, congratulations, you now proudly own 100% of the lead pipe in front of your house because we don't want it. And if you don't like it, sue us.
And is this a matter that's in the courts at this point?
No. Who's going to sue their water company to determine who owns the lead pipe? I mean, so unfortunately, in a lot of cities, it's a shared responsibility where they've come up with a solution that says the city owns the lead pipe up to the property line, and then the homeowner owns the lead pipe on the other side of the line. In other cities, they claim the homeowner owns the whole thing, but if you don't like your city's position on it, what are you going to do? Are you going to take them to court and sue yourself?
Yeah, I think the old line is you can't fight City Hall.
Yeah, and you'd be crazy to do that because they have all kinds of resources, and you know where they get their resources? From you.
Yeah.
So you're suing yourself.
Is there an option of lining the pipes, lining the lead pipes?
Yes, that's actually one possible solution. They have approaches, and it's been used in Europe and in some municipalities in the U.S., that they can actually drain the pipes, sandblast them clean, and then blow in an epoxy liner that essentially the water never touches the lead. It only touches epoxy.
Is that less costly than replacing the pipes?
Oftentimes it is. It's not as inexpensive as you might think. But many people view that with some trepidation because the thought is, oh, yeah, you've got that nice liner there now, and all of our experience shows that it stays at least 20, 30, probably might even last forever. But some people, you know, they're in their minds that lead pipe is just a little bit away, and if that plastic ever disappeared, we'd be right back where we started from. So for that reason, many people are looking for the pure 100% solution that has no chance of failure ever, which is to get rid of the lead pipe completely. So, but the lining approaches are quite effective, and we just have this intellectual barrier to get over.
So take me back to the two cities that you mentioned, to Washington, D.C. and to Flint. How was this lead contamination problem detected? What were the signals?
Well, unfortunately, the signals in both cases were parents figuring out that their kids were getting lead poisoning from water. In Washington, D.C. and in Flint, Michigan, moms had to figure this out on their own, where their kids were having learning disabilities or their growth was being stunted, and they had to investigate, and oh yes, the child's health problems co-occurred with elevated lead in blood, and that's one of the things lead does. And then the parents would actually have to, in many cases, fight the health department over the cause of the lead poisoning. Of course, lead health departments are very much in the mindset that it's lead paint, and they will always look for that risk. And if they find it, they just say that's it. But in some of these cases, there was no lead paint risk in the house, and the parents eventually tested the water and figured out on their own that they were literally being poisoned by their own government.
So it sounds like the mechanism for detection relied on the damage to have been done.
That's what makes this so outrageous, is that parents had to figure this out. Even as we pay people to protect us from lead and water, instead what they're doing is almost working full-time to cover up problems. So one of the most outrageous things that occurred in Washington, D.C. and Flint, Michigan, is that they had clear information that there was lead and water problems, and they covered it up. The law says they have to tell the public. rather than do that, they cheated to hide the lead in water and misinformed the public that the water was safe when it was not. And that's why this is, in many respects, one of the worst crimes ever perpetrated by a government against normal consumers, because it's such a fundamental betrayal. We pay people to do this work. We pay people to be the environmental policemen, and in both cases, they behaved as environmental criminals.
My understanding is that there is some criminal action in progress in Flint.
To date, yes, 8 people have been indicted, and more indictments are expected. And this is very unusual that you will charge civil servants with a failure to do their jobs, essentially. And in Flint, 12 people died from Legionnaire's disease, most likely as a result of this, as well as neighborhoods of children with elevated lead in their blood.
I'd like to learn more about the testing, because it sounds like the way to defend against this, given that it's the service lines that are the major source of lead, is that you need to do the testing at the tap, not in the distribution system.
Yes, we have a law in this country that's designed to stop this problem completely. It's called the Lead and Copper Rule. And one of the tragedies in Flint, Michigan and Washington, D.C. was if this law had been followed, when the city found high lead in the water, people would have been told, and they could have protected themselves and their families and used bottled water or filters, or, you know, there's not really a problem with lead in water other than if you don't know it's there. You can always, you can still take baths and it's not a problem, but it's just the small amount of water you consume. If you avoid that, you can protect yourself and your family. And the tragedy is the law was broken. And rather than tell people that there was this danger, which is their jobs, they covered it up. And in fact, told people the water was safe when it was not.
But again, to implement that, the testing needs to happen in the home. Isn't that right?
Yeah, the Lead and Copper is the first and only law in the United States that requires the utility to go to the kitchen tap and take a sample. All other samples that are collected are designed to look at water that's in the big pipes. And it's kind of for this reason that this law is hated so much by water utilities, because they've never wanted responsibility for the safety of water to the consumer's tap, even though that's where we drink it. But yeah, the Lead and Copper will require sampling of the water that people drink in a kitchen or in a bathroom.
So how common is it for municipal water utilities to be testing at the tap?
They all have to do it. It's what the law has required for 25 years. And, you know, if you find that a certain percentage of the samples are too high, all you got to do is tell people and then take steps to adjust the chemistry to make lead in water lower.
But are they doing it?
Well, that's the problem. We're seeing all around the country now. Every rock that people turn over after Flint, looking at this lead in water issue, whether it's in our schools or in our cities or in our homes, they are realizing that nothing is being done, or the government agencies or the water companies have been cheating and giving us a false sense of security. And in many cities around the United States, people have too much lead in their water, and they should be told that they need to take steps to protect themselves. On top of that, the existing law, we now know, is not good enough, that if anything, we have to make it a lot tougher. So people are very angry that we're not even meeting this existing 25-year-old law that everyone knows is not protective enough.
You and your students have done a lot of testing for Flint and other cities. How did you get involved in that? I'm going to label it outreach activity, but it's really part of your research, as I understand it.
Well, in Flint, we knew, you know, after the tragedy in Washington, D.C., no one was held accountable, and the agencies never said they were sorry. And if you do not learn from your mistakes, you're bound to repeat them. So, unfortunately, we knew that another Washington, D.C.-like event would occur, and unfortunately, it occurred in Flint, Michigan. And we'd kind of prepared for that day where literally we would have to go to war with government agencies who are supposed to protect us, but in fact, behave more akin to environmental criminals. And so when we got word from parents in Flint, Michigan, that their children were being lead poisoned from the water and that Flint was not following federal law and EPA knew about it and was going to do nothing, you can't make the story up, but it's all documented in emails and in congressional hearings, We launched a relief effort in collaboration with Flint residents to do the job that these agencies refused to do, which is to test the safety of their water. And we very quickly realized that they were far in excess of World Health Organization or federal standards. And within about 6 weeks, the state admitted that there were serious problems, especially after it was also discovered by a pediatrician that blood lead was rising in Flint neighborhoods. And so 6 weeks after we got involved, the population was getting relief in terms of bottled water and filters to protect themselves from high lead. Had we not got involved, when I say we, I meant all the people in Flint and these outside actors who stood up and mustered this critical mass of moral courage to say the government was wrong, Flint kids would still be drinking that water probably to this day, which is really terrifying to think that how bad the damage could have been had all these outsiders not stood up and fought for the health of Flint's kids and families.
So what can and should the average householder or the business do to detect and protect against this problem?
Well, that's the problem right now, because when you don't have trust in your water company, what will you do? And all across the United States, we've never had less trust in our potable water supplies because of what happened in Flint. Because of Flint last year, for the first time, bottled water sales exceeded soda sales in this country. The tragedy is that many water utilities are doing their job effectively, and the water from the vast majority of taps in the United States has relatively low lead. But the problem is, if it's your family that's got high lead in their water, that's not good enough for you. You're the ones that are being harmed, or many of our most vulnerable children in poor urban areas are the ones who are being hurt by this, and lead exposure is the last thing they need, given all the other things that are going on in their lives. The question about what we do with this mess is why there's so much angst on this, why this story has got such international and national traction, where the U.S. drinking water system has become an international embarrassment. But essentially, parents have had to start fending for themselves. They have to get bottled water or filters, find out if they have a lead pipe, do testing on their own, because our government agencies have failed us. They have betrayed the public trust.
Do you think the large amount of press coverage has shown the spotlight on these government agencies? Has it not been a wake-up call that at least some of them are paying more attention to this problem?
I think because it's become such an embarrassment and they've been subject to such ridicule, and there's also realized crimes have been committed here. You have indictments that they are taking their jobs a whole lot more seriously than they were 1 year ago, when their attitude was, they could cheat and hide and cover this problem up, and they thought no one would ever care. They realized people do care. And I think, if nothing else, a good message that's been sent out is to civil servants across the country, the vast majority, we know that you go to work every day and you want to do your job, and sometimes under difficult circumstances because people are standing in your way. But the message is, please do your jobs, no matter what. And one of the things we're learning is that these agencies have a culture where, frankly, if you do your job, you can get fired for that. So it's not just EPA and the state of Michigan, but it's across all our government agencies where good civil servants are being punished or not allowed to do their jobs. And one of the reasons Americans are just so upset with their government right now, but a lot of those are reflected in the tragedy in Flint.
So you've spent a great deal of effort on this, and I think you've taken some risk yourself through your engagement in the public debate about responsibilities of public officials and professionals. What's the message that you want your students and working engineers and scientists to take away from all of this?
Regardless of who is paying your salary and who might be right in front of you at this moment, that you actually, one way or another, are working for and serve the public, and that you are their ears and eyes, and that they are trusting you with this power. And if you ever betray that trust, then what's to become of us? What's to become of science and engineering? What's to become of humanity? If science and engineering ever becomes untrustworthy and we lose the public, we will enter a new dark age of no one will trust us. And so I think that's the main message, is your first job, your first service is to the public welfare.
That's a good and important and valuable message to end on. Mark Edwards, I really appreciate your spending the time to talk with us today, and I wish you well in your endeavors.
Carrie, take care.